Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Joshua Smith.
And we are joined today by a couple of the members of Noise Bias, an all-female contemporary ensemble. So we're joined with Jill DeGroot and Kelly Sheehan. Yeah, very exciting. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, no problem. How's your day been so far?
Rainy.
True.
So we were just talking about how amazing and weird the internet is. I found you guys on a weird searching up new music groups binge, and I reached out to you guys to come on, and thank you so much for doing that, because it could be, you know, that's a weird, just like a cold message of like, hey, I do a podcast in my apartment with cats. Yeah, like, will you come? Yeah. But yeah, thank you so much. So you guys have been, you guys have had an event, and you have an event coming up, right?
Right.
How long have you guys been working under the name Noise Bias?
I want to say since November, I think, of last year.
Mm-hmm.
I had this idea in November, and I kind of just made like a call out post, like a call out meeting. If you're interested in this, this is like a shot in the dark. Nobody will come, but I'll bring snacks. It'll be cool. And it actually had, like, a ton of people, women that were interested in joining or being involved in some way, whether that was, like, writers or composers or musicians. Mm-hmm. Since November. But I think our first show was in December.
Yes.
And then our second show was in January. And then our third show is in March.
Awesome.
Cool. And so this is our fourth show coming up.
Nice.
Yeah.
So in your initial search and your first like posting, whatever, what did you ask for? What were you looking for?
I don't think I asked for anything. I just said, hey, I have this idea for an all-women's group where we only play music by women. Does this sound something like something you're interested in? Show up on Friday, you know, the School of Music Lounge. There'll be food, and we could talk about it.
Awesome. Like,
a lot of people showed up, so that was cool.
Oh, that's so cool.
I heard about it because my partner, Gretel, tagged me in your post.
Really?
I didn't actually read it.
That's funny.
Yeah. And it wasn't until, like, a few days later, Gretel was like, did you ever read that thing I tagged you in? And I was like, what thing? And I went back, and I looked at it. I was like, oh. And then it wasn't until after our meeting that I was, like, sitting in the lobby at DePaul, and I, like, looked around, and I saw your, like, flyer for Noise Bias, and I was like, did not even see that.
Did not.
And then I actually had this memory of, like, me sitting in that exact chair and, like, seeing you and, like, kind of moving out of your way because you were posting something. That's what that person was posting, was this flyer to Noise Bias, and I still didn't even read it. Oh. It wasn't until, so we can thank Gretel.
So thank you, Gretel, for wow.
Yeah, that's how that happened.
Well, it worked out.
Yeah. That's awesome. Cool. So talk a little bit more about kind of your guys' mission. Because I think it's a really cool thing. So it is entirely women, an entirely female collective.
Mm-hmm.
I also love that you guys specified people that identify as women, which is cool.
Yes.
You're gonna hate me.
No.
Harkening back to a podcast from the other day.
Did I do you guys again?
You've said it like 16 times. when it was the, remind me of their name, the theater.
Nothing Without a Company.
Nothing Without a Company. I wasn't here for it, but I was listening to the podcast, and they called Daniel and Maureen out for saying you guys like 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And then I realized today how many times I just said it in casual conversation.
Really?
I was like, no, it's so pervasive in our, but in honor of that podcast, I had to call back to it.
It's really one of those ones that's really hard to not use.
Yeah.
And I'm all for the idea of the evolution of language. Like, I think language really needs to adapt with, like, as we recognize that the things we say can really hurt people. But, like, for some reason, that one is really difficult. Anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to go off into a whole tangent about
that's
that.
That's my fault.
So, tell me more about your alls. Your all's mission.
Y'all.
Y'all's mission.
Um, I think it kind of was born out of me seeing other new music ensembles growing. Like, you have Mockrep and Phonema and all these new music groups that are having a blast. And noticing that a lot of the people involved in the new music scene, at least in Chicago, are, like, white males.
Sure.
And kind of trying to imagine my place in a group that was dominated by, you know, white men. And so I kind of started searching on, you know, Google, like, all female groups in Chicago, new music, and nothing was really coming up, and I was kind of surprised by that there wasn't, or, you know, some sort of collective mm-hmm. for new music for women. And then I came across an article by Ellen McSweeney called The Power List that she wrote in 2013, and it kind of breaks down why women aren't, like, movers and shakers in the new music Chicago scene, or even in the classical music scene, really. So that's why I was like, okay, well, why don't I make a group for that?
Yeah.
So I guess our mission would be to put women in the driver's seat a little bit for mm-hmm. the new music scene in Chicago.
Yeah.
And to get more of women's music played and performed, and get more women performing it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
the idea.
How much would you say of your work ends up being things that have already been, I think the word for it is derived, or is that a theater term? But things that are, like, newly commissioned, newly premiered, I guess maybe is the word, and how much of it ends up being things that are more just new? Is it, I think the, like, the general standard isn't, like, 50 years maybe or something like that is kind of where new music falls?
All the works that we've done are already works that have already been written.
Cool.
And most likely within the past 20 years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've really gone beyond that yet. Mm-hmm. We haven't done much, like, commissioning or, like, you know, absolute new premieres. That is something we're talking about doing, though. That's something we're definitely interested
Great.
In. It's just our last four concerts have just been, like, sprints, mm-hmm. you know? Like, we formed in November, and our first concert was in December.
Yeah.
And that was, like, that was the Planned Parenthood fundraiser that we did.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and so we wanted to raise money for Planned Parenthood, and we just, you know, took off. Jill did a lot of work, like, just within a few weeks putting that on. And then we had just followed that up with January and then February. No, not February, March.
Yeah, March.
And then we were doing this show April 12th, which has been great, and we loved it. We love being able to do these things. And we're just making, like, putting on the concert that we want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been mostly very new works, like, written within the past few years, even. I think our next step is definitely going to be commissioning or working very closely with a composer of our choosing. And I think that's sort of the next step after April, our show on April 12th. I think we're going to, like, sort of really work on putting together, like, a flawless concert
mm-hmm.
and, like, just try new things with new works and new composers for sure.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about that is when you guys are coming at it from this angle of trying to expose female composers, I think I'd be curious to know what you find as far as, even though these things have been previously written, like, how much of it is things that people have never heard of?
Mm.
How much of it, like, do you guys find that even the people that you're working with are kind of, like, learning these things new?
I would say almost all of them.
Yeah.
A lot of the works, I mean, I'm trying to think back. There's only been a couple of works where people are like, oh, I know that piece,
mm-hmm.
you know? And when Kelly has been awesome and has been, like, curating the past few shows, we kind of have to dig a lot and sift through stuff and kind of talk about curating programming, like, a very cohesive program. So I think usually it's we play pieces that people don't know or haven't been performed very often.
Yeah.
So.
And sometimes we get lucky, like Laura Atkins and Rachel Brown. They're two musicians here in Chicago, and I think Laura has come to us with, like, already knowing a bunch of Rebecca Saunders pieces. Like, it's really great, because I think when you're saying you're an all-female contemporary music group, you're going to attract people who are sort of already interested in doing this and probably on the side, mm-hmm. already doing this in their own mind, like, purposefully learning pieces by female composers. Like, it's very easy for me, not easy, but it's not hard for me to, like, think of 5 female composers because I've been doing this for so long, and mm-hmm. I'm just so mad at the curriculum that doesn't do this, like, mm-hmm. that doesn't expose us to all female or all female composer, like, curriculum. So I've sort of, like, in the back of my mind, just always have a running list of female composers that I come across. And it's just been a delight to be able to curate these works and, like, put these on a thing and, like, send them to Jill and say, look at this, play this for me.
Yeah, that's cool. Amazing. So I guess for me, because I'm relatively new to the new music thing, right? And I'm actually doing some work on it myself, but is there a particular genre you would say within new music? Like, to me, I guess because I'm an opera singer, I'm like, contemporary classical is what I do, and that's new. But new music can mean so many things. Is there a way that you define it, or are you more open about what it could be?
That's a hard question. I think we've really just spanned the gamut right now.
Okay.
We're doing, like, really complex works, like Rebecca Saunders, and then we're doing really almost quote-unquote anti-academic works, like Pauline's stuff, which mm-hmm. is very improv-based and open structure, open instrumentation. So, I don't know, I don't think we've really settled into an identity of who we're really trying to program yet. And I kind of like that so far.
Yeah, that's cool. I think it's awesome, too, because we're attracting audiences that maybe do have a background in new music or have some sort of classical training, and then we're attracting some people that don't know anything about music at all.
That's awesome.
So we've had pieces, you know, that are relatively, like, easy to understand, straightforward pieces. We've done some, like, experimental electronic sounds, mm-hmm. pre-recorded tapes, toy pianos. Like, we've kind of done a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes our shows interesting, is that it's approachable.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. Because it is something that I think is also kind of symbolic of the term new music, where it can really be so many different things. And, like, some of it's tonal, some of it's decidedly not. But I do think that having the running current of exposing female voices is really cool. So I'd love to talk a little bit about, I'm always just really interested in the concept of pre-recorded music. Like, I think it seems as a, when you're coming into it, because I'm assuming that there's, I mean, I've seen a couple just in when I was in school and stuff of pre-recorded music performances, but there's also kind of a level of, it's a very unique task trying to bring something to that as a live performer. What would you say is your kind of, like, first steps as you're kind of working on and putting up one of those kinds of pieces?
From, like, a performance perspective, or?
I mean, I honestly, yeah, definitely. If that's, I know for me, I always kind of gravitate towards asking questions that are, like, from the performer's perspective, because, mm-hmm. like, that's kind of my, whenever I, like, tackle music, I'm always like, how would I learn this?
You know, right.
Like,
Yeah.
Me too.
But also, I also really like the thought that you are, the perspective that you're coming from, like, as a curator, like, as a programmer of, like, because you then, without meaning to, you start thinking about, like, arc and, like, how are we going to get from minute 0 to, like, minute 60 of a performance or something like that. Yeah, sorry that I've just kind of said a bunch of different things and not really asked a good, that's kind of my calling card, I think, at this point.
Here's a bunch of thoughts.
Yeah.
Go.
But anyway, so I guess with pre-recorded music, let's do it like this. When you're programming and putting together these kind of pre-recorded performances that also have to have the live aspect, what do you find yourself gravitating towards, and what ends up being your goal? If that, or do you even have one? It's yeah, sorry.
I think it depends a lot on the piece. Mm-hmm. Our last show was called Noise Bias Made You Mixtape. So every single piece had some sort of pre-recorded electronic element to it. And I think every piece was different in the way that it, one would have to prepare it, but also in the final product. The Choi flute and electronic piece that I played at the last show, that I will also be playing at the next show, that piece is interesting because it was inspired by the fuzzy, blurry effect of photography that you know, sometimes happens. So when you listen to the recording, you're not really supposed to know what parts of the sound are pre-recorded and what parts are live. And when you look at the score, there's parts where the recording and the flute have to line up exactly right, or at least get close. So she was very kind and put minute markings in the score, so I could have a timer and look, okay, at 2 minutes in, I have to play this high D that lines up right with the recording. But at the same time, you get that aspect of, like, is that the flute? Or is that the recording? Or, like, what sound is that? And that's then, so cool. Oh, that's actually the flute making this weird sound. And so for something like that, you kind of have to blend all the parts together. But then you, Kelly, wrote a piece for the show. Kelly is a composer. Cool. And she's amazing.
Very cool.
And she actually performed her own composition, too. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because I feel like that's another pre-recorded composition, but it's completely different than something that I just talked about. So
yeah. Well, broadly, while trying to curate this work, I personally really like, as Jill talked about, tape pieces that blend the two worlds, so like the live aspect and the pre-recorded aspect. So we had like this piece by Kate Sapor, and it's called The Understanding of All Things, and it's, you know, a text is being read, and the text is being read on tape as well in person. So a lot of times you'll hear a word begin in the tape, then Ellie, who was performing it, would finish the word live. So it would start on the tape and then come through Ellie. So say, like, if the word under would be on the tape, and then Ellie would have to finish it with, like, stand. And so, like, that blurring between the two lines was something I looked for in almost all the pieces while curating. So for my own piece, I wanted to also do that. So I wrote a piece for toy piano in pre-recorded sound. I sort of imagined an inner life of a toy piano, like what it is, a toy and it's a box. So what could be happening inside this box? And the whole thing was I took a Bluetooth speaker and put it inside the toy piano box. And so all the sounds were also coming from inside the toy piano. That's whether or not
really cool. How cool. Yeah. That's
whether really or not cool. I was playing it, or if it was coming out of the tape, and I really wanted to blend what was happening, so that's sort of how it was inspired by all the other pieces on the program.
How much amplification do you get from the inside of a toy piano? Is there like the acoustic of that? Is there anything there?
There's some, you know, like, it is a lid that you can open, and there's some, but not much. So you have to be careful not to overwhelm it, unless you want to.
Yeah. Kind of like putting your cell phone in a, what do they do when they put it in a toilet paper roll? Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah, amplifying the sound. Yeah. Kind of make the speaker louder.
Right. Yeah. Cool. That's really cool. Have you had the experience of composing and performing works a lot?
That's actually not something I don't usually perform my own things.
Yeah.
So that was sort of something I sort of branched out and tried for myself. That's something I'm doing more often, just broadly within my own works, is it's very hard for me to perform my own works because I'm my own worst critic, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, of course.
But I think I'm growing and learning and really just forcing myself to do this. And it's been great. I've been enjoying it a lot.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool. Let's talk a little bit more about your next upcoming event. Mm-hmm. Would you mind telling us a little bit about kind of the conceit of it?
Yeah. So we talked about the last show, Noise Bias Made You Mixtape. That was curated by Kelly. And then were you approached by someone about...
Yeah. Andrew Time asked about if we were free. It was basically like, hey, are you free on April 12th? And I was in class and I got the message. So I sort of kind of ignored everything that was happening and like, just sat like the word yes burning my mind. I couldn't like take my phone out and like respond.
Oh, no.
So I was like, yes, we are free. But I also wanted to like run it by everyone to make sure we were like, I wasn't overcommitting. But yeah, Andrew approached us, was like, hey, are you free? And there's this thing called the Resonance Series that I, you know, that I can connect you with. And so I said yes. Andrew sent along the email and just sort of connected us with the Resonance Series. So we're on there with a few other people. It's going to be us. We're starting at 9, running for like an hour. Then we got Phonema, and then Parlor Tape DJs are also going to be doing a thing.
Cool. And so, so you guys run the Facebook page. Was that you were saying that you got a message on Facebook?
That was my personal Facebook.
No, because the reason I ask is because I'm interested in, I've worked kind of administratively for a lot of different, not a lot, like two different performers. So many. I'm a big deal. No, but I think it's really interesting, these conversations. Obviously, there's so much conversations to be had about the actual artistry and figuring out kind of how things work. But I also think it's really interesting to kind of talk about navigating the communication and administration of multiple creative people and figuring out, like something that you mentioned already was, you know, you said that you didn't want to overcommit for other people. That's kind of one of those, that's a very common thing, I think, because you come into a thing, into a project, and everybody comes into a project with their own expectations of what it's going to be, like how it's going to look and things like that. And maybe your expectations doesn't meet what someone else does. We were kind of touching on this before we started recording about the idea of a lot of, not a lot, I've seen it a couple times recently of this collective mindset. It's very powerful and it's very useful. It's a very useful tool. But there are its own challenges. So I wanted to ask kind of you guys what you thought, being people that I would, like, it seems like are pretty, like, high up is the wrong word, but formative as far as the administration of this organization, but also working hard to make sure that every voice is heard. What are some of the challenges of that, and what are some of the things that have worked out really well?
I think the very idea of noise bias as it exists right now is challenging.
Yeah.
Like, we don't make money, and we don't pay our performers, and we can't pay for commissions, and we just started a few months ago, and we were very lucky to find someone that let us use his space for free. Shout out to Chris Narlock, literally, who lets us use his space when we ask him, which was like amazing. Yeah, so we've really got lucky with the amount of people that were willing to help us out, give us space, come to our shows, that sort of thing. But it is a challenge every day to kind of constantly be like, hey, we need to do this, and we need to curate this show, and also I got a message from this person and they want us to play this day, but oh my gosh, so-and-so has, you know, strep throat and they can't sing the piece anymore. And it's like the most chaotic but amazing experience that I've had. And it's been so rewarding and also educational. I'm not like a music business major. I have no experience or background in like running something that I made up, you know? And I think it's great that we've been kind of creating this like team mindset. Right now we've kind of made ourselves core members, if we want to call ourselves that. Like, me, Kelly Sheehan, and Ellie McMullen, I've kind of been taking Noise Bias to the next step, if that makes sense. Yeah. So maybe one step away from the collective hive mind to more of like, okay, the three of us are actually going to organize this so that maybe one day we could make this more legit.
Right.
I don't know. It's a really stressful at times, but mm-hmm. also amazing. And I think the mission is important.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That was a long rant, and it started here and ended over here.
It was really great.
That's fun. Everything I say.
That's like the nature of this podcast, I think. That's a lot of that.
I think we're very lucky too, because we're in Chicago, and we also know a lot of people, you know, and so we're able to email people and say, hey, do you know someone who can play this? And if they're not free, they'll send you the recommendation of five people who are awesome and are free and are interested in doing it. And
that we'll do without pay. Yeah. Which is, like,
that's
insane.
That's a challenge.
That people are willing to, like, play music with us without being paid, especially when their level of musicianship is, like, insane.
Yeah, we've gotten so many great people to play with us.
It's kind of amazing now that I'm, like, thinking about it. Wow. Yeah.
The cool thing is when you have a really great project that's innovative and interesting, that's when people, you know, if you're just like, hey, can you play the Schubert Ave Maria for me? someone's probably going to be like, what are you going to pay me? But when you're, like, offering something that's actually innovative and breaking some barriers, I think people are much more interested. They're like, yeah, this is something I'm passionate about. So let me give you my talent, because that's what I have.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I think you guys have really hit the nail on the head, too, talking about Chicago. I know my personal experience, administratively, I think the pinnacle of my administrative experience is that Opera on Tap group that I was running for a while. I was there for 3 years, and we did a monthly show every year. And the first year especially, there was a lot of just like, how the hell do we get all of these moving yes. pieces into a thing that makes sense?
Yes.
But I think after a while, you really starts clicking. As an outsider looking into your group, I can tell you already that it looks like it's already clicking. It probably doesn't feel it that way doing it, but I just felt like that was an important thing to say. What was my point? I just blanked out. I hate when this happens during interviews. I'm easily distracted sometimes. I forget what I was saying. I think that... I've just lost it again. Did you have a question?
Yeah, sure. So, while Daniel thinks about that, I actually still kind of have a question about... So you were saying, harkening back to the beginning of our conversation, about this article that you read. Mm-hmm. And I would love to kind of hear more about that. What's in that article and kind of what inspired you from that.
Yeah, I actually brought part of it today. Perfect. Because I find myself coming back to it. So this article by Ellen McSweeney, it was written in 2013.
Okay.
It's called The Power List. So she breaks down the reasons why women aren't equals in new music leadership in Chicago. She talks about misconceptions that women have an easier time rising to the top in arts when, like, statistically that's not really accurate. Right. She kind of talks about what does rising to the top in new music actually look like. And she also mentions how that kind of success is hard to measure, which is kind of ties into what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. How it's kind of hard to measure the rate at which our ensemble is clicking and getting everything in motion. Her basic question is, like, are women equally represented among prominent art shapers and cultural decision makers? Are they curating the most cutting-edge concert series in town? Are women the people whose concert reviews you eagerly anticipate? In Chicago, that's a no. So, I don't know. She has a bunch of statistics about Chicago Tribune, Chicagoan of the Year. All 9 of them have been men. All of the writers choosing these winners are men. Oh. You know, that sort of thing. Like,
that's so interesting.
Yeah. And it goes on for several pages where she kind of breaks that down. And it was at that point where I was like, okay, so we need this group.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
Well, kind of that really actually makes me realize what I was going to ask. Or not ask, but the thought I was going that will hopefully lead to a question. And that is that Chicago is a really interesting thing because of the fact that there's so much artistry here. And I think that that's interesting because you're talking about trying to measure that, right? And trying to say, like, what is, and I'm using air quotes, worthwhile. And, like, what are things that people care about? What's influencing the scene? What's forwarding the art or whatever, however you want to put it. And it's tricky. And I know this is very true for the classical music scene, and it's or for the opera scene specifically. And it sounds like it's actually also true for the new music scene, is that your audience, your target audience, are mostly also artists, and they're mostly also low income. They're mostly also people that are just trying to make it work, you know, and they want to put up whatever performance they can. And I think there's a giant conversation that can be had of like, well, when you work with a group like that, how do you make what you're doing productive, and how do you make it? there's got to be a better way to put it, but how do you make it make money? And that's a conversation we could have. But I'm more interested in kind of talking about what you're bringing up with this article, which is when you're looking at the ecosystem of Chicago and what kind of is the norm, if that were a thing, of like what is influential. You know, and I think there is definitely something to be said about that most of the things that we can say are influential are mostly white and male. What do you think are some of the goals that you'd like to see noise bias achieve?
I think commissioning works would be a great, like, beginning step for us right now. Getting more female composers' works made.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's like the first step for us right now.
I think my broad and long-term goal is like to normalize female composers and female musicians. Sometimes I feel like, you know, a unicorn, like,
yeah,
or it's not, but it's treated that way, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's not,
we're an anomaly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went, like, did a campus interview, like, recently for, like, doctoral programs, and I went down and sort of sat in the room and realized, like, oh, including faculty and the students, like, I'm the only female-identified person here, and that's the norm for me, and that's just, like, a thing that happens, and I'm not, you know, bashing this place that I went and visited, but it's, like, a thing, and it'd be nice if we could broadly just sort of normalize, you know,
yeah,
female-identified people in spaces of power within the new music community. That's sort of, like, my long-term goal. Mm-hmm.
Having more voices in the room,
yeah,
would be really helpful.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know why I just...
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. It's something
about... It was heartbreaking for me to, like, hear that, because, like, that does not deserve to be the way that it is. I'm sorry.
It's something I've been thinking about a lot lately in just in the grand scheme of music and society, that so often the goalposts for success are set by old white men. And so it becomes so hard to succeed, not because there aren't, like, women doing it and doing it well and mm-hmm. being brilliant and whatever, but just because it's not validated by these old white men. Mm-hmm. And I it was like, oh my God, if we just stop not searching for the validation, that's wrong, because most of us really aren't searching that validation, are we? But a lot of society depends on it, doesn't mm-hmm. it? Well, that depends on it. I mean, mm-hmm. like, you know, thinks they depend on it. Oh, God. This is hard to express, but it's... But I realized it, and it's so easy for men to say female comedians aren't funny. You know, it's mm-hmm. that line, that pervasive
yeah.
line, and I think that that's probably true in so many communities, and definitely true in the music community, and probably part of what the that article was addressing frustration with, and that mm-hmm. these competitions and these rooms full of men and doctoral programs are people who are perpetuating mm-hmm. and not letting anyone else into the boys' club, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's mostly frustrating because those people are there. Those other voices are definitely there.
Right.
It's a myth that they're not. And, like, that's the frustrating thing. We just need to let them in the room, you know? And it's the myth that they're not there is what's helping, like, perpetrate this, like, keep it going.
Exactly, because they're there.
Yeah, they're absolutely, like, there.
I kind of got to the point, too, where it was like, okay, well, let's not use the excuse where, that there's not enough music by women out there. That's why I don't play it. That's why I don't program it. Force yourself. Force yourself to only listen to music by women of color, read books by women of color for a week. You know, only read, listen to, you look at art by women of color. Force yourself to see it because it's out there. It's just, you just gotta pay attention to it.
Oh my God. You know.
And then you get to the point where, too, you, like, if you start reading it and you can't relate right away. There's like a learning gap there, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, you can't relate because of your privilege. Like, I don't, like, what do you do with
that's
that?
That's one of my and broadly trying to make myself a better ally after calling out a bunch of straight allies. Well, I should be a better ally to other, you know, in favor of intersectionality. And I just engaged in project. But I was like, let me follow some influential Black women on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Let me just do that mm-hmm. and just not even not interact with them, but just watch what's happening.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. I learned a lot, mm-hmm. and it's for the way for the better as a human. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. It's all out there if you mm-hmm. just, but you do have to make the effort, don't you, mm-hmm. to include that in your in what you're digesting and what you're who you're letting in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm interested in talking a little bit about, because I know that you mentioned that you had to do some digging. What did that end up looking like?
At first, we kind of had a curation Google Doc type thing, cool. and I sent it out to everyone that was ever at all interested in noise bias from the very beginning, and I said, if you know of any work, if you're interested in any work by a female-identifying composer, put it on there.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of piled on, but, I mean, at this point, now that we're trying to create more cohesive programs, I don't know, we kind of just search and come up with ideas and then send them to each other and talk about them. Do we like them? Do we not like them? Why don't we like them? What makes this cool? What other pieces could we put with this piece? Who could we get to play this?
Yeah.
It's kind of like this messy process.
Yeah.
But I don't think we've ever gotten to a point where we're like, there's just not enough music by women. We give up. Like, it's never gonna get to that point. And there's resources out there. I think there's a lot of actually Tumblrs that have compiled lists of women composers.
It's like,
ooh, yeah, wow. Like free Tumblr's resources.
Great. I think it's called Many Many Women.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like cool. .tumblr.com. It's all there. Yeah. I don't have them off the top of my head, but there's at least three websites that like specifically just list female composers.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone through most of them at this point. Yeah, we're just late night clicking. Mm-hmm. Do you have our instrumentation? Yes or no? And then going from there, but yeah, like they're out there
sending them to each other and being like, oh my god, this piece, like, what is this piece?
And we have like a list of dreams, like, oh, in 5 years we're doing this piece or something.
Yeah, we have the people, we're doing this piece. Yeah,
we have the people and the space and the resources, we're going to be doing that.
Yeah. it's a fun process, you know. I thought it would be way more challenging actually than it actually is to put shows together.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like it's all the front end difficulty, the like finding the hurdle of learning what your tools are, because I think it has to be made yourself, like figuring out how to find female voices, figuring out how to find the composers, figuring out how to find the works. Is there was no class in school about that, you know? And I think that is the problem, and I'm really thankful to you guys for like starting that process, and which is also why I was very interested in hearing about it, and I hope our listeners were too. Cool. I'm trying to think. If you guys want to send us links, we'll post them.
Oh yeah.
With the interview up on our like Facebook and stuff, because that'll be really cool. Because I like the idea of trying, you know, with our Facebook is stupid with its like reach stuff, like
the algorithms that it uses to you never know who's gonna see what, and I'm still seeing April Fool's jokes and yeah.
So anyway, we can help with the 20 people that will see the post.
Awesome.
We'll make sure that that's a thing. Very cool. I know I have more questions. I am just blanking right now.
As it is like right now, what instruments are y'all playing with?
Well, for our upcoming show, April 12th, we have some violin and oboe action. I'll be playing flute on the flute and electronic piece. I'll also be collaborating with Ellie McMullen, who is a vocalist, so it'll be flute and vocal.
And percussion.
And percussion. We're going to have some solo percussion going on.
So. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, this seems like our stable instrumentation right now.
Okay.
Sort of like leveled off on like that five instruments. Which you can do a lot with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we've been desperately looking for a pianist. Like, desperately, you know. Yeah. Someone that will, like, work with us for no money. If you're a pianist and you don't like money, please, please play with us.
Guysbuysmusic@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, I'd love to know, when it comes to your personal tastes, what kind of music do you end up gravitating towards?
I feel like I pretty much love everything new music. The weirder, the better.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, strange, weird. I love electronic type music. I think that's awesome. I was actually thinking about that recently. When we were at the Mock Rap show, I would love for our ensemble to get to the point where we could do, like, the most crazy, ridiculous, far out stuff and have people be like, yeah, that was cool. Like, I want to get to that point where, like, we're legit enough to do, like, just ridiculous, crazy, weird, avant-garde music.
So, what is your response? Because I feel like this is, anytime I've ever been like, I'm always interested in new music, and then, the first negative response, and I'm sorry to do this, but the first negative response was like, I just like tonality too much. Like, what is your, like, initial thought to that?
I like tonality.
Yeah.
I like everything. If it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there is bad music out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Noise Bias, me and Jill and everyone we come across have just have like the most open mind and like no bias in what they do like, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of interesting because I think that's kind of the part of it is that I think a lot of people have a lot of predispositions about what new music is. And it's either like what would be new is either like completely in the popular realm or like microphones swinging in front of a speaker or something, you know?
That'd be a piece
we'd
do.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah,
I have a twin brother who is in a couple of metal bands. But then he loves noise music, which I have a hard time calling music because it's literally just noise. But it is music, and there's an interesting soundscape. And it's something that I hated until I started accepting it.
Yeah. I feel like what I would say to the people that have a, you know, predisposition to non-tonal music would be maybe you just haven't experienced the right type of new music for yourself, you know? I'm sure we all have types of new music that we're like, not my favorite. But there's so much out there that there's got to be something for you.
And I think there's something to be said about actually going and experiencing it live, as opposed to just like, let me show you this on YouTube, and you might not, you won't get it. But going to something live and experiencing it viscerally could really open your mind a little bit to the possibilities of enjoying it. I think
absolutely,
and I think that goes for any form of music, really.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I used to love tonal stuff, only tonal stuff, and now I don't write tonal stuff, like. It's not my language anymore. I don't think anyone ever came out of the womb like, I love non-tonal music.
Like, I love new music.
Tone tone only. I don't think like anyone came out of the womb that way.
Only Rose. Yeah.
I don't think anyone ever came out.
Right.
You know. So all the musicians, all the composers who do the stuff you don't like started somewhere, and they probably started liking the stuff you like. And they've gone and done different routes, and you can definitely follow them down their rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
And you just gotta sort of learn their language and learn, like, how to look at the thing that they're doing. And, like, what is their language and how can you access it? And there's a lot of ways to do that, and it's usually just by listening and going to live shows and experiencing it yourself.
Cool. We have a couple minutes before we have
a couple minutes that happened just this morning.
Yeah, that just happened this morning.
Yeah.
I really love the idea of the blended form of the pre-recorded stuff. I'm not meaning to harken back to pre-recorded again, but what I am interested in, how much do you find yourself playing with things that are kind of you expect one thing maybe, and then it ends up being something entirely different. And maybe it's tonality, maybe it's structure, where, you know, a learned ear may hear something and then all of a sudden it just veers off into like something that was completely unexpected. What do you think about that juxtaposition? And do you think that there's a need for it? Do you think it's just another thing that exists in the void of sound? I don't know really what this question is.
I don't either.
Does it, any of this make sense to you guys?
I'm not sure. I thought I did, and then it kind of changed. Originally, what your question made me think of was, we were trying to experiment this last show, the mixtape show, with remixing a piece that was already composed.
Cool.
So it was a piece by Alex Temple that incorporated a video and a live speaker. And when I originally saw this composition, I thought that would be so cool if we could remix it and do it again at the end of the show, and do our own version of it, but with live sound of some sort. Because it, you know, like, it's a video and then a live speaker, but what if we actually had, like, instruments playing?
Yeah.
And I'm not a composer. I've never written anything. I'm a flute player. That's what I do. That's what I know. And Kelly was, like, super swamped with stuff, and I didn't want to be like, Kelly, write me a whole new piece by next week. So I was experimenting with that, and it went, like, this direction, and that direction, and that direction. It was terrible, and it was horrible, and everything was bad, and it made no sense at all. And it kind of took so many different paths.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually we ended up making a remix video out of nothing. So it started out as a remix of something that already existed, and then we kind of twisted every which way until it broke, and then we started over and created our own video. So that also kind of makes no sense and doesn't relate to your question at all, but that's what it made me think of.
I think this is like what was happening to my question as I was asking it. Was I think a thing that we're really into in this show, obviously, is trying to reach out to things we don't understand and things we don't know about. And I think it's hard to be the person in the room that doesn't know something about a thing. But I think that I think there's really something to be said about that idea of just kind of working with something and working with something, and then all of a sudden it breaks. And I feel like that's, even in the most immediate metaphorical sense, that's kind of what that question of mine was. What am I asking? And I guess, so my now newfound question is, well, you already answered it. I think that there's something to be said about that kind of acceptance of, oh, this just didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like search for that moment, or did it just?
I feel like it was, for me, as someone who is so used, as a classically trained flutist, I'm so used to someone saying, here's this piece of music, listen to the recording, learn how it's supposed to go, play it just like that.
Mm.
And when you're doing new music, it's really not like that.
Uh-huh.
And so I was thrown into a position of like a creative process that I had no experience with. I don't write music. I don't know anything about that. So it was like, this isn't working, and I know it's not, but I'm gonna keep trying. And then it ended up not working, and I was like, oh, I knew that. But we ended up creating like a whole new thing.
Yeah.
That existed on its own and was kind of inspired by the original video, even if it wasn't a remix of the video. But I also owe that a lot to Kelly, who was like, do this instead. And I was like, you're right. Ah. But again, I think that's why Noise Bias is so cool, is because when else would I have gotten that experience?
Right.
You know, I just did it. And I was like, well, I have this idea and I'm going to try it. And if it fails miserably, then so what?
I think it was the best, or it was the most liked thing on our program from the last show. It got the most laughs.
Yeah.
Like, everyone loved it. It turned out really well.
It ended up being a remixed video from this super sexist video that we found on like a public domain website. It was called How to Supervise Women in the Workplace. Oh. And it was a super condescending, like, sexist, like, you have to pay attention to women because they always slack off and they're dumb and you have to talk to them and tell them what to do all the time. But I took out the clips of men and put monkeys in instead. And then we played the national anthem, but, like, very poorly on top, as slow as possible, and also had a kazoo on top. So it was just the most ridiculous composition. I don't know. I think it was an experiment with how ridiculous we could go while still be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the most important thing, well, not the most important thing, but something Jill did was write a new script that took all, like, the insults or comments lobbied at women and lobbied it at these primates, at, like, these silly workers. And I'm sort of, like, hearing, you know, hearing yourself. It was like a mirror of what's said to women, but being said to something like a monkey.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
So. I don't know. But, like, when else would I have been able to experiment with that? Like, what other forum would I have been able to put on a show that had kazoos and the national anthem and videos of monkeys? Like, I think that's why Noise Bias is cool, because it gives women the opportunity to explore and do wild, crazy things without being shut down, you know?
It's very, like, free, open, collaborative space, and it was really great. Jill went out and bought, like, a bunch of dollar store kazoos. It was, like, the best rehearsal I've ever been at.
Yeah, we were, like, tested all of them. We were trying to, like, figure out how to make different sounds on these, like, plastic party kazoos.
I love it.
It's cool.
Those are tricky, though, too, because sometimes they can just not work at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I felt like I had to get, like, 50 of them. Because you never know, you know, which ones are going to work, which ones aren't. But
cool. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. The last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug of their upcoming event. It doesn't have to necessarily be that. Sometimes it's obviously that. Sometimes other people come on, though, and they don't have anything upcoming, and so they just talk about, like, their favorite TV show or, like, their favorite thing that's going on, or shouting out another organization that they really love. So the floor is yours.
Well, April 12th at the Hideout, 9 p.m., we'll be on, like, a joint bill with a few other Chicago ensembles. So come to that. It's part of the Resonance series.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm really excited. There's going to be some awesome groups there. It'll be, like, a lot of bang for your buck, you know? A lot of new music, a lot of different pieces.
A lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it's our first time performing outside of our usual venue.
Yeah.
Which is, like, very exciting for us. So, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Cool. And so, Facebook event, I did see that. I think we'll link to that on the episode. And you guys have a website, right?
Yes.
Which is that? The
noisebias.org.
Great. Mm-hmm. And where can people get tickets? Are they just at the door, or are they in advance too?
I want to say it's at the door.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
You can definitely get something at the door.
Yeah. Cool.
I hope.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not wrong.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
And I am the drugstore generic version of Maureen Smith.
That's not true. You're your own thing.
Surprise.
Joshua Lewis Smith, everybody.
That's me.
Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to hear more about what we're up to, if you want to see more, rather, we have old articles up, a bunch of different stuff. You can see the list of podcasts up at scopymag.com. That is our website. You can find us on Facebook under Scopy Magazine. I'd mention it in the QIO this morning. This will be coming out tomorrow. Tuesday for you people that
it'll
are
be today when you're listening.
Yeah. Nailed it. Over this week, I am 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I took a bunch of photos walking around while in school of Chicago, and so we're kind of doing a photo essay up on our Facebook page of different photos of Chicago. So if you want to check that out, please do. Keep posted this week. We'll be posting up an episode every day. Actually, we've got a few really great interviews coming up. You can find us on Instagram at @scopymag. You can find us on Twitter as well at @scopymag. Do you want to do the donations?
Yeah, so I'm going to do the Maureen spiel of donations are important. Well, we today had a couple delayed starts due to some technological faults. Mm-hmm. And if we got a couple more donations,
Yeah.
We could get some new mics and a new mixer and maybe start on
time. Yeah, seriously.
and not burn out our eardrums with, mm-hmm. with loud beeping noises. But so go to the website, scappymag.com. Maureen has claimed that she put donate buttons everywhere, all mm-hmm. over the website. And you can...
I'm sorry. No, the thing that happened was I showed her what a sidebar was on the website, on the Weebly thing. And she was like, oh, great. And so we put on every sidebar a donate button. Which is, like, just nailed it.
There's donate buttons as far as your eyes can see. And so, you know, you can give a little, give a lot. We like monthly subscriptions. And if not, you can like and share. And I also would highly recommend rating and commenting on iTunes so more people will see us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that will be super helpful. That's kind of how people get discovered podcasts on iTunes. Yeah. Those little reviews, that's really helpful. Cool. All right, well, thank you all again so much for listening. Go out and make something.